The Cosmo with Scott De Butler on RTE Pulse in association with Gaystar News. For all your LGBTI news, gaystarnews.com.
You're listening to The Cosmo with myself, Scott Butler, here on RTE Pulse. Now, as always here on the show, in association with Gaystar News, we find out what is taking place in the world of LGBT news and what are the stories that people are talking about the most. Joining me on the phone at the moment from London is Joe Morgan, the London journalist with Gaystar News. Joe, you're very welcome along.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Let's get straight into one of the big stories that a lot of people are talking about at the moment. Fred Phelps of the Westboro Baptist Church, he is on his deathbed. And considering the amount of times that the Westboro Baptist Church have picketed funerals of soldiers, whether they're gay or straight, obviously this is an interesting topic for the LGBT community.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, while I'm certainly not throwing a party and putting up piñatas, to given, somewhat being happy or at least ambivalent that there's going to be somewhat less evil in the world. The real question, though, is that some are questioning whether LGBT people should give the Westboro Baptist Church a taste of their own medicine and protest his funeral, like they did to so many soldiers and LGBTI people. I mean, there's been a variety of ideas of holding a gay wedding to a same-sex kiss flash mob, and the Satanists want to turn him gay in his afterlife.
Yeah, that was a very strange one.
Yeah, that's very strange. I don't understand how they're going to do that.
But probably best not to ask, in fairness.
Yeah, very difficult. The majority, though, I think that the gay community should take the high road, let his family and friends mourn him in peace, and give them something that they refuse to give hundreds of soldiers, hundreds of LGBTI people, you know, and show the Westboro Baptist Church that we are better than them.
Yeah, and this is obviously something that's being echoed by even a lot of celebrities, LGBT and otherwise. I remember seeing on Facebook George Takei, more or less saying,
beautiful quote.
Yeah,
I've got it here.
Oh, brilliant!
I take no solace or joy in this man's passing. We will not dance upon his grave, nor stand vigil at his funeral, holding "Guild Hates Fred" signs. Tempting as it may be, he was a tormented soul who tormented so many. Hate never wins out in the end; it instead goes always to its lonely, dusty end.
Very, very poignant indeed.
So it's poetic.
Very poetic, actually, yeah. And very well read, I have to admit. But it is an interesting point to make, though, that, you know, there are so many people that, you know, understandably would want to take a bit of revenge. But I guess the general message that is coming out is that the high road probably should be taken here. Let's move on to another story. That this is a very, very rare case. And obviously here on The Cosmo, every so often we talk about sexual health with our resident health expert. So we talk about issues like HIV, but this is a very strange, definitely a rare case.
It's a sad story in a way as well, because it proves that you can never be too careful. I mean, there's always been this information that lesbian sex is completely safe and you can't catch anything from it, but that's not true. But, you know, it's always a bit of bluntness. But when fluids are mixing, sex toys are being shared, and genitals are rubbing together, anything can happen. This 43-year-old woman from Texas, who got HIV in 2009, started taking antiretroviral treatment and then stopped in 2010. After that point, she met another woman, and during a six-month period, they obviously had sex, and then that other woman got HIV from her. There's only a handful of cases across the world. You know, doctors ruled everything out. It could only be the sex that the HIV was transmitted. And it just shows that if you do have HIV, you should continue taking the drug treatments whenever possible, and just to stay careful.
Yeah, and I think it does definitely show that, you know, while a lot of a lot of talk, even within LGBT media, is kind of aimed at men, that, you know, clearly this is a female issue as well. And as you were saying as well, you know, if you're on antiretrovirals, and even if you become undetectable, that doesn't mean that you're cured and that you can stop. But obviously, for more on that story, you can check out gaystarnews.com. Let's finish up with a slightly lighter note. So it's a bit of a strange story, but we mean that in the most funny way possible. Adele songs could possibly turn you gay. Is this where I've been going wrong all my life?
Yes, exactly. I mean, over 26 million people bought her last album. I think we would know if they had turned up gay.
True.
Embarrassing Bodies, the resident gay doctor, Christine Jessen, a new documentary has just aired in the UK and Ireland on Channel 4 about gay cures. And he experiences these gay cures for himself. And in the film, he met a Texas doctor who used to help cure, quote-unquote, gay men, and this doctor, quote unquote, told the actual doctor to stop listening to Adele because it's apparently very popular in the gay community.
This is absolutely incredible.
Ridiculous.
You'd have to wonder why is it just Adele? Like, you'd kind of wonder, like, what about Kylie? Is this clearly fine? Or Madonna? God forbid.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he just listened to Rolling in the Deep a couple too many times and then he thought,
you know,
this is where I want to go.
This is such a strange thing. And you know, you kind of wonder how this even makes it into the news in some ways, but it's just so bizarre. Like, I'm kind of left speechless in some ways. It's like, I can understand why that might make me, you know, bitter and single. That's kind of understandable if I listen to it too much. But gay, really?
No. Passive aggressive, yes. No.
Right, well, listen, we will leave it there for the moment. Of course, for those stories and a lot more, you can pop over to gaystarnews.com. But in the meantime, Joe Morgan, pleasure as always to chat with you. And thanks very much for being on.
The Cosmo with Scott De Butler on RTE Pulse in association with Gaystar News. For all your LGBTI news, gaystarnews.com.
Now, continuing on with the chat here on The Cosmo, Tony Walsh is one of Ireland's foremost LGBT rights activists. He was founding editor of GCN magazine, and he's also the founder of the Irish Queer Archive, Cartlan Éireadh na hÉireann, part of which is stored at the National Library of Ireland. In the first of a two-part interview, Adam Long spoke to Tony Walsh earlier about queer life in Ireland, queer history in Ireland, and the LGBT rights movement almost from the very start, I guess. And he started off chatting to Tony and asking him what life was like for LGBT people in the 70s and 80s. Have a listen.
It was a very enervating time, I think, to, well, one, to be an activist. It was an interesting time to be a lesbian or gay person. I mean, really, trans identity hadn't really entered our lexicon in the 70s and 80s. But to be a gay or a lesbian was to be constantly pushing against the oppression and repression we found ourselves in.
This was entirely decriminalized when we were criminalized.
I'm splitting hairs here, but I mean, homosexuality per se was never a criminal offence. It was sexual behaviour between men, and in a way, that nuanced difference in the criminal law to reflects the sort of the overbearing religious morality that pervaded Irish society at the time. I mean, I think Irish society, well, first of all, Irish society was economically impoverished. One could argue, I think, creatively, culturally, it was a really interesting time. It was a period of change. We had joined the EU in the early 70s. We were opening ourselves up to influences from abroad. It was still very difficult to get in or out of the country. Airfares, there was only one major airline. This is before the days of Ryanair. So people actually have to try and picture a time when there were lots of people emigrating. Emigration was a given.
A lot of lesbian and gay people too had been part of that.
Listen, loads of lesbians and gay men emigrated, not just because they couldn't get jobs, but because it was just socially, it was so repressive here. So people actually gravitated towards the large urban centres of gay fabulousness like Berlin or Amsterdam or Paris or New York or San Francisco. But you know what? I don't want to sort of paint a picture of victimhood that was exclusive to lesbian LGBT people in the late 70s and early 80s. I think life for anyone who was kicking against the sort of mainstream culture that was so beholden to suspect Roman Catholic morality and ideology. Anyone who was kicking against that overbearing culture would have found it difficult to sort of just get on with their lives.
It's interesting you say that, Tony. You talk, it's like you're pointing to kind of the LGBT, the lesbian and gay movement as it would have been then, kind of part of a broader progressive kind of coalition. Was there kind of almost a solidarity between the different groups campaigning for change?
Well, there was this. I mean, amongst some of us, there was, amongst some of us who were political strategists and activists, there was a recognition that LGBT liberation and LGBT equality was only one part of a much wider platform of political change and cultural change that was necessary in Ireland. But not everyone saw it like in those sort of neat and tidy terms. And there were some people who were rather single-minded in just trying to define and articulate an LGBT political sensibility independent of wider change. I mean, when I, throughout my 20s, which would have been the period, the decade of the 1980s, I quite clearly saw that gay liberation, as we called it then, gay liberation, was simply just one facet, one aspect of wider human liberation, a wider part of trying to change Irish society around a whole load of issues that needed dealing with: the lack of contraception, the lack of divorce, the lack of abortion, the lack of positive sexual health education. In fact, the lack of even just basic sexual health,
which remains an issue to this day.
Infrastructure,
indeed.
I mean, it's just a story for another day. But I mean, it's extraordinary. We lived in a society where, and it just shows you how difficult things were, that local authorities found it impossible to actually actively promote their own sexual health clinics, or VD clinics as they were called at the time.
Tony, we're going to leave it there for the moment, and we'll come back to you to develop again on those themes. But for now, thank you very much, Tony. Tony Thanks. Walsh.
The Cosmo with Scott De Butler on RTE Pulse in association with Gaystar News. For all your LGBTI news, gaystarnews.com.